I think just a fun backstory is when I was 25, I had a year of yes, where I just would say yes to everything. And that was super fun because I was in a really dark place. I was living alone. I didn't really love my job. I just kind of felt stuck. I had bought a house. It was 2005 and I had bought a house by myself on a $40,000 salary. Like, it was so wrong. Everything about it was bad. It was non-fi. But then on coming out of that, it was like this freedom phase of like just exploring what was out there and what the options were. So that was kind of a precursor coming into my relationship with my husband, who's not adventurous at all. So I think it's been a growing journey to really start saying yes as a family. And what do I need to say no to so that we can like be a little bit more at home and stable and realize like those things. It was balancing all of that.
All right. Well, that's going to be our episode today, everyone. We're speaking with Heidi Dusick, the host of the Ordinary Sherpa podcast. We're going to be talking about the adventure mom lifestyle design and everyday adventures. For those of us that identify with her husband, we're just not that adventurous. But we recognize that probably that will come with some level of regret, you know, benefit of hindsight. We're willing to be pushed. So for those of you that are willing to be stretched, pushed a little bit past your maybe limiting beliefs of what your life needs to be, Heidi's going to stretch us today. And welcome to the Ultimate Crowdsourced Personal Finance Show. This is Choose FI.
You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
All right, guys, very excited to dive into this week's episode. We're going to be speaking with Heidi Dusick, the host of the Ordinary Sherpa podcast. Just an amazing, incredible podcast. If you haven't listened to it yet, you should definitely subscribe. But we're going to be talking about this idea of lifestyle design and looking for the extraordinary and maybe what some people would write off as ordinary. So to help me with this, I have my co-host Brad here with me today. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Jonathan, I am doing quite well. Yeah, this should be a really, really interesting and fun conversation. So Heidi's podcast, I'm a longtime subscriber now. The theme of the podcast is to help families connect through simple and authentic adventure experiences. And I love that. I love when Heidi says that. It really resonates with me because how can you find, like you said, Jonathan, the extraordinary in the ordinary? And this really appeals to me on like a very deep level, because I think I might be more constitutionally suited to like Heidi's husband, which is like, maybe I'm a little hesitant to, oh, it's so easy to stay home. Oh, it's so easy, dot, 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 fill in the blank, right? But memories aren't made when you're just kind of doing the same thing over and over again. And I think just looking for that, having that mindset of looking for adventure is so important. So I'm trying to cultivate it. And yeah, I know, selfishly, I'm really looking forward to this. So Heidi, welcome to Choose FI.
Yeah, thank you. So excited to be on the show, guys.
All right. Well, you know, this adventure mom lifestyle design, you kind of kicked off the episode. I could tell we're ready to hop right into it. Pre-marriage, you had this incredible, adventurous lifestyle where you just did it all. You said yes to everything. And marriage is a blessing. Kids are a blessing. But like for many of us, we talk about the old days when we used to be able to do whatever we wanted to through the lens of maybe our scrapbooks and our photo albums and everything else. And you entered into this and your partner is a non-adventurous person. And now you have two kids. There's a lot of reasons to just say, okay, we're in the next chapter of our lives. Those days are behind us. Like, did you have a moment where you accepted that as a reality, or you just, no, I refuse to ever accept that?
It's a little bit of both. So I'm a little bit of a rebel. So there's always been this little nudge inside of me, like there's a different way. I don't have to just accept. So the idea of like settling down was probably the most fearsome for my life. Like I knew that I wanted kids. I signed up for this. I knew I wanted my career. To Jonathan's point, I had spent a lot of money on my education that I didn't want to throw that away and just be a mom. I didn't want to throw away this idea of adventure because I had kids. So I was trying to figure out and decided, all right, I got to optimize this. I got to figure out a way. And I leaned into my husband's strengths, which he's still adventurous, but he's like a closet adventurer. So he really loves motorcycle. So I was like, okay, well, we can figure this out. I'm just going to hack it a little bit and find a different way to look at this adventure. It wasn't probably where I would have spent my time, but that's how I got him on board. And once he was on board, then he was like, oh, I get what this does. Like, this is kind of like the antidote of regret. It is a way for us to really build these experiences. They're not always expensive. I should mention, by the way, he's super thrifty. And so I had to convince him that we could do this on like a penny budget. And then it's been a challenge all along. Like, can we keep that little budget that we had when we first started out? We got married in 2008 and it was, you know, remember 2008, it was tight time. So we had to really kind of get creative in how we adventured as well.
That's really interesting. I love the parallel to Phi, actually, in the sense that you met your husband where he is. You tried to find like, hey, what would light him up about this, about going down this path? And I see parallels, like I said, with how people approach that first conversation about Phi with their significant other or spouse, right? It's like, hey, this might appeal to you, right? Like, what are your dreams? How could we do this together? As opposed to just dictating like, oh, I'm an adventurous person, so we're going to do all these things, whether you're kicking and screaming or not, right? Like, you figured out, hey, what's the adventure that appeals to him? That's really fascinating. I wonder, like, how would you generally advise? Because, you know, you're, whether you think of yourself like this, you're teaching people now how to live a similar adventurous life. Like, how do you advise people to have that first conversation?
Yeah, I think it comes down to the first conversations are really just exploration, discovery, what really lights that person up. And we have started to align these experiences with what we value most. We really value family time and connection time. So I didn't want to be off adventuring without my kids. Like, I wanted to create experiences where we could adventure together. And it's actually led to further conversations, because the other thing is he's very crafty. He loves to build stuff. And so that usually means we have to be in a place, right? We can't just go off adventuring around the world all the time. We have to be home occasionally. So we're currently renovating a fourth generation farmhouse that we live in, and that lights him up. So it was really finding these small wins. What is it that they dream about? And how do we experience that on, I guess, like from a product development side, it's almost like doing a minimum viable product and testing it and then going, okay, did that work? Was that, we did a joy audit too, by the way, like to geek out for just a second. I don't want to go down the rabbit hole, but we did this little experiment where we would say, okay, what was the value of that experience? How much time did we spend on that? And what was like our joy rating? And it's very non-scientific, by the way. I mean, it was literally like 1 to 5. And then we started to look at, okay, where are the things that are really bringing us the most joy? How much are we spending on them? And how much time does it take? Because time is also one of the enemies of advancing these adventures, is you just always feel like you don't have enough time. So as we started to get clear about that, it was like, well, this doesn't have to be this epic thing. It was really simple things that lit both of us up.
I want to go back to the first one. Like, he's a non-adventurous person. All right, so what is he interested in that then we could tack adventure onto, right? It seems like that was the way in. So you said, all right, he's interested in motorcycles. Okay, what did that mean? Like, how did you pull it off? What lessons did you take away from that first little stab at building this adventure-rich life?
Yeah, so the first real adventure I took him on was, he and I were sitting in our car. I was driving somewhere. He was in the passenger seat and he's looking at a motorcycle magazine. And he's like, gosh, look at all these really cool bands in Sturgis. And it was like mid-July and Sturgis is in middle of August. And I looked at him like, well, let's go. And he's like, no, I don't have a big enough bike and I'm not made for, like, that's 4 states away. We don't have enough money. Like, there was all these excuses. So slowly we just started to go, well, so what? Let's just go for the weekend. I'm the person riding on the back of the bike. Like, who cares if the bike is big enough? I'm the one that's going to be uncomfortable. And we packed up our stuff. And there was something about that he's like, you're serious, aren't you? I'm like, yeah, I'm serious. So we left on a Wednesday and we came back on a Sunday, which is insane. Like, nobody signs up for that. But I think he realized, when you say yes to me, I'm going to do it. And I'm going to hold you to it. So there was this little accountability thing. And then he had so much fun that he was like, I had no idea this was even possible. And it didn't cost us a ton of money. We had a campsite. We already had a tent and gas money and, you know, some food. So it didn't really cost us anything, but that was his in. And then I think that's probably why he married me, you guys, is I think he realized like, oh, this could be so much fun. And it doesn't necessarily have to be these crazy adventures all over the world.
Huh. Yeah, I love that. Just saying yes. This can be so much fun. It doesn't have to be scary. It can just be fun. And something you said a couple of minutes ago, like, adventure doesn't have to mean traveling. right? I think a lot of us just kind of equate those two things in our heads, or frankly, a lot of time, right? Like an adventure can be a micro adventure. It can be a couple hours on a Saturday morning or a Thursday morning, whatever it may be, right? But you talked about this fourth generation farmhouse. Like to me, as you're saying that, because my mind is now trying to get into adventure mode, like renovating a fourth generation farmhouse while you're living there, that sounds like adventure by any definition, right?
Yeah. When you actually look at the definition of adventure, it's actually like a new or uncomfortable experience. So it's not defined by even physical exercise or an outdoor activity. I think that's what people, like when you think about the icon for adventure, you probably go to like a mountain or some really epic thing. But the definition is really about getting yourself outside your comfort zone and learning or doing something new. And so that's where we try to focus adventure on. Yeah, there's sometimes those crazy wild things of, I haven't climbed Mount Everest and I probably will never will, but there's that like idea of a summit that seems really inspiring. But we try to think about adventure as like the journey of what are the little things we can do every day to stretch ourselves outside our comfort zone and learn and grow and create these experiences.
I was thinking about that joy audit, and now we're tying that to the word adventure, and we've given ourselves room to expand the definition between an icon with a mountain and a person climbing over the first boulder. And now we're saying, okay, you're allowing yourself, you're stretching your comfort zone, you're getting a little bit uncomfortable. You know, maybe it is a little bit scary. But so I'm just thinking through in your mind with all the different ways that you've looked at this, tell me if this framework, I'll give a starting framework and I'd love for you to build on it. I'm thinking some of the factors would be cost. You know, what is the cost? Is this an adventure at home? Is this an adventure in our local city? Is this a regional adventure? Is this a world adventure? And you've probably done some that fall into each of those categories. Like how, what framework do you use? You know, I gave a simple one at a minute and a half. What framework do you use for the categories that adventures fall into?
Yes, I would say it depends on connection activities. So we think about it like what's a family adventure versus an individual adventure. So in all of this, I'm trying to get my kids to also see the value in learning new things and following their curiosity as opposed to, I guess, regurgitating what they learn in school. So I'm trying to get them to also explore it. So there's kind of kid-based, family-based, individual-based. Mm-hmm. So we made it a goal this year that my husband and I would each take a solo adventure and a single parent adventure. One where I take all the kids and one where I'm by myself, because it also nurtures yourself, but also nurtures those connections and gives the other person space, especially after 2020, when we've been like on top of each other and together for so much, we needed a little space. So that would be a category, is like what are individual, together, and then kid-based adventures. There's definitely geography is included in there when you think about, you know, what's local, what's maybe 50 miles away, what's in our state, what's in our country, and then is it something we drive to? Is it something we fly to if we're traveling? Some of it has to do with cost. Some of them too are, what are we aspiring towards? And then if you work it backwards, what's the first step? So to give you one example there, like maybe it's an activity. My oldest son is into single track biking, and that's probably an adventure that I don't know that I want to sign up for it. I've done it, but like that's a skill and it's a little bit more Black Diamond-ish than I really want to do. But if that's something he's working towards, what are the things I can do to help him get that exposure now without having to jeopardize everyone in the family or to do things so that one child, I don't want everybody else to sit on the sidelines, if that makes sense. You know, like how do we foster those benchmarks towards longer term adventures and experiences? And another example is we are thinking about a gap year. So we've been doing these little tests of, we just did 3 weeks in Hawaii. Can we handle that much time together? Is that too much time? Like, how do we need to build in breaks? We spent some time in an RV. Is that too close? Like, is the space comfortable enough? Do we have enough of a connection? So there's a lot of little nuances that really go into that. And I don't know that I added a lot of value in your framework, but there's little aspects or criteria, and it somewhat is pulling from the things you value. If you really value connection, you may have to build that into your framework so that you have peers that you connect with along the way. If you really value solitude, well, then you need a space where you can be alone and define what that looks like. If you really value, you know, listening to podcasts or books, what's the library that you're building? So I think there's different ways we learn, there's different ways we connect. All of those things kind of are built into that overall framework.
Yeah, I have a couple questions jump out to me, but the first one is around like non-traveling adventures. We said, you know, these are just new or uncomfortable experiences. It doesn't by definition have to be travel. Like, can you give like a couple of examples just for people who have only ever previously thought of adventure as traveling. Are there a couple of examples that jump out to you as like, hey, this was an adventure we did in our house or in our neighborhood or whatever, or just learning something? Does anything jump out to you right off the bat?
Oh, yeah. So I'll give you two examples. One is just something that we do indoors. We do a monthly adventure list, and we've been in a week of rain. So it's been a little nuts around here because we just came off these epic adventures and now we're like stuck together in the house. So we'll have this list that we can pull from, and it's everything from board games to let's create a new design or a new project. I wish I had a list in front of me. I could give you some examples, but little things, you know, sometimes we ate dinner with chopsticks the other day.
Oh, wow.
And it was mac and cheese, by the way. Like, it's not these hard things, but it's funny, right? It creates these really funny moments. On a different lens, it also applies to my professional life. My husband and I are both still working full time. We're still on that path, and we've got a couple more years before we're truly going to be FI and completely independent. And so those hard questions are still out there, and those adventures are things that are uncomfortable, like negotiating for more time off, or my husband wanted to negotiate for a sabbatical. So things like that are still adventures to us because we still use that framework. Is this helping us reach our goals? What is this going to offer? Is this a value? What's the first step? So all of those things really apply to many aspects of our life, not just the fun. I say it's about life, work, and play. So what are the adventures in each of those segments, and how do we advance our goals?
I want to talk about a term that I think I heard for the first time on your podcast, though I'm not sure that you're claiming it as an original term, but it's this one of untourism. And I think it goes to the heart of what Brad was talking about. If you're applying a creative lens to adventure, and whether you're looking at it inside your house, inside your, you know, local city, inside your region, your state, the world, what does it mean to embrace this idea of untourism kind of as a philosophy for grabbing onto adventure?
Yeah, I would say at its core, it's traveling differently. So it's looking at, in like the FI lens, it's taking a problem and looking at it just a little bit differently and having a unique experience. So to just kind of peel back the onion on that, first of all, I always try to choose locations that I'm unfamiliar with. So many people, we have a tourism issue, and now there's ecotourism and all that kind of stuff because we've over-tourized. Is that a word?
It is now.
Sounds good. Yeah, I like it.
Places have been overutilized by tourists, and so it's kind of damaging those facilities. And so I think, for example, you think of Paris. What do you think of? You think of the Eiffel Tower. What else is in Paris? What is completely unconscious to me because I've never been exposed to it. So for us, like, the first step is how comfortable or how much do we know about this place? And we try to lean towards places we know nothing about.
Let's use Paris just as an example, because I think this is an aspirational probably place for many, many individuals. And what you're actually saying is, all right, I want to go to Paris, but my goal when I get to Paris is not to see the Eiffel Tower. So we're going to go 6 months from now, a year from now, whatever. You're applying an untourism framework to what that experience will be. So it happens long before you get there, right?
Yeah. So first of all, we're choosing the location up front, and then we build our network around that location that we're interested in. So we try to really connect with locals and get to know, like, what are the small businesses in that area? Where's the best food? Like, what's the flavors or the food that that area is known for? What's 50 miles away from the greatest attraction in that area? And what's unique about that place? So it's starting to build our network and ask these really different questions about the places in that space so that we can connect and have a different experience. So it's all of those little unique things, but that all happens prior to even going.
I guess, would it extend even to, hey, everybody who goes to France thinks Paris, but this is a large country. There's somewhere, I don't know, 70 million people roughly live there. Like, there are a lot more experiences we could have outside of Paris. Like, you know, I think there's a pretty obvious answer here. I don't think you're going to surprise us, but like, do you guys try to look for off the beaten path, or can it be just as fun to go to that major capital city and then find these unusual experiences that nobody else who's going there as a tourist is doing?
Yeah. Obviously, if we're going to Paris, I'm going to still see the Eiffel Tower, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying you can't do those things. But then it's not basing your entire vacation around the Eiffel Tower. It's saying, how do I find the hidden gems? So I'll just give you, if it's okay, I'll give you one example of how we did this in Hawaii. We were going to the Big Island. And if you don't know, there's a car rental shortage everywhere right now, in particular in Hawaii. So we didn't have our accommodations or our car rental. We just had our flights and we realized, shoot, this is getting really hard. We got to think about this differently. So we've used apps like Turo. We were even looking at car dealerships and Craigslist. But then I connected with these locals and I said, hey, I know we've like RV'd, but it doesn't look like there's much camping on the Big Island. Do you have any insights? And someone's like, have you thought about like a camper van? Long story short, we ended up getting a conversion van, a 1996 conversion van. I don't know many tourists that sign up for like a 1996 conversion van, but it fundamentally changed our experience because now we had some local cred going into these campsites and connecting with locals. We stayed on people's private property through an experience called Hip Camp. It's kind of like Airbnb, but for camping. And it saved us a ton of money in accommodations because it was a different experience. I know that's not for everyone, but I'm trying to paint the picture that there's an opportunity to look at things just a little bit differently and have a different experience.
So let's say that we're, you know, it's white canvas. We're planning a vacation. We want to have an untourism vacation. And we're just saying, okay, we're going to use this whole philosophy to actually pick our destination. So maybe it won't be Paris. There's a lot of places to choose from. Maybe that, you know, maybe we'll be go somewhere else. And then we're going to use the then framework of, all right, well, whatever we end up picking and whether we're going to need to do some form of networking. It sounds like, you know, whether it was this story you just shared with us or the one before, networking or talking with people that actually live there is a big piece of your strategic planning. Like, it, talk me through how that actually worked. Did you happen to have friends in Hawaii? Did you join some sort of groups online? Like, how do you go about fostering these connections in a place you've never been before?
Yeah, so I use Facebook groups a lot. And in fact, the Choose FI Facebook groups are great. The Choose FI geography-based locations, you know, like we've used it for Ohio, for Cleveland, we used it for Maui. Those are rich with people that know the local area and they think like us, right? So this Choose FI community is a great place to start since you're already here. Tap into those local communities and get to know what's unique about this place. That's step one for us. Then I look at what are we interested in doing and are there groups that already exist to support what we're interested in. So if I'm interested in camping, I might look at Facebook groups or networks that I'm familiar with that really support that for families. I'm always looking at it through the lens of families. It's very different to have some of these epic adventures, not even epic adventures. It's very different to do travel rewards or travel hacking or travel planning if you're a single person or a couple as opposed to a family. So I'm always looking through the lens of family. So I would say, you know, use your local area, the geography, but then also start tapping into what do you want to do or what do you want to learn about? The third thing I would suggest is once you start to see what the options are. So here's another example. When we were on Airbnb looking for potential accommodations, I happened to look at some of the experiences. So you can get like cooking lessons or, you know, all different types of things. One of the experiences on Airbnb was to do this hot ponds or these warm ponds. They're kind of hidden, private, warm ponds that are heated by lava beneath the surface, but they're fresh water and they're free and completely accessible. But I had to figure it out. Well, it was $125 a person. I was like, whoa, not doing that for a family of five. So I just kind of had to connect with the right people to figure out where were these places? Is it, you know, something that would be appropriate? What do we want that to look like? And we DIY'd it. We figured out how to do it ourselves so that it was different and didn't spend $125 a person.
That's really cool. And just for everybody listening, if you're not familiar with the Choose FI local groups, you can find the whole list of 300 plus local groups throughout the world at choosefi.com/local. And yeah, I'm very well acquainted with the Choose FI Maui group, actually. We spent our Red X month there in 2019. And yeah, just an amazing, amazing group of people. So that's cool that you've met up with them as well. And I'm curious about kind of the intersection here of like short and long-term adventures. So I think you talked a little bit, you know, talked about untourism. And I think there's some aspect of, okay, we have a family, we have options. Do we need to stay in our own location or can we travel the world? What does that look like for schooling? So like, I think there's some aspect of, are we testing things out? And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounded like you were alluding to that before. Like, are we testing out like, hey, maybe what is a long-term adventure? So I'd love to hear your thoughts on long-term adventure and like how somebody would test the waters for that with maybe shorter-term adventures.
Yeah, thank you for that. Yes, we absolutely are testing everything. And if you put the lens of how you learn a skill, Jonathan, to your point, talent stacking, right? I learned how to podcast through these little tidbits of things that you test and you try and you iterate and you get better at them. It's the same lens on adventuring. So we might have a long-term goal of doing a gap year. And that takes a lot of different things that we need to test. Like I mentioned earlier, I don't know if that means we're going to explore traveling around the world or if we're going to be in an RV. So what does it look like to test life in an RV? And that starts with step one of like, can I cook outside? Can I build a fire if I had to? Where can I stay for free that, you know, I don't have to spend a lot of money on, so this budget doesn't get out of control? Then we started looking at things like, okay, what happens if one of us gets hurt? You know, there's still like the life things, right? I have a son with a health condition I got to be thinking about. So are there locations that I should be thinking about and learning about now, or the way I should set up my HSA or something to be thinking about now so that there's that possibility of an adventure in the future? So it's always this back and forth testing of just the first. I always like to say, what's the first next step? So if this is my big goal or this is my dream, what is the first next step? Because it's also so overwhelming sometimes. Like I still have all the other things, right? I'm still a mom of three. We're both still working full time. So it's not like I'm just doing this full time and enjoying life all the time. It's still hard. So you still have to make space in your calendar, learn these new things and test it out. So part of it has to do with, I would say, like even minimum viable product. What is it, the first step that I can take today and then learn from it and iterate? Like, oh, that wasn't great. We learned we can't just go somewhere without any plan because we sit around and look at each other and go, oh, what do you want to do? And they're like, I don't know. What do you want to do? Like this slow travel thing isn't working. Well, no, it could still work, but we need a little bit of a plan behind it or some options behind it so that we know what is available to us instead of spending all of our time looking for those options when we're there. So it's just this constant one step forward, a little bit of iteration, and then, you know, kind of going back, like, could you see, we've had this conversation now with my kids, like, could you see us living in an RV for a year? And they're like, you know, I think we can. So you test it and you're like, okay, how about a month? Let's try a month. Could we live in it for a month? And I think getting out of your comfort zone also means just leaving and going to a different place occasionally, because it's so easy to just like walk back in the door and you're like, oh, this feels comfortable. I'm used to this. So being intentional about getting outside and staying outside for a little bit is important to us as well, you know, in that overall framework and that lens of testing.
Yeah, I love the parallel yet again to kind of how we talk about preparing for your FI life, right? It's like, oh, I have a plan. And, you know, the caricature we always say is someone has a plan to sail around the world and they've never spent 30 minutes in a sailboat.
Yeah.
Probably not such a great idea, right? Just like, Hey, we're going to spend 2 years in an RV as a family of five, and we've never stepped foot in an RV before. Again, Probably not the world's greatest idea. So can you test these things before you get there? Can you see what you like? Can you iterate? And yeah, I mean, I absolutely love that. And the kind of pivot I wanted to move into here real quick is you mentioned something before about alluding to people who have different wants and desires within the family, right? You mentioned something about like someone who craves solitary time. And my alarm bells went ringing off in my head because, you know, that's probably me. Like in my perfect world, again, I haven't tested this, but like a day or two or three alone, like in the woods or one of those like getaways, the little tiny homes in the woods, like that appeals to me intuitively. Like, so I guess my actual question to you is when you have a family of five who undoubtedly many people, there are different wants, there are different personalities, there are different things at work. Like, how do you navigate that in terms of, hey, we ultimately need to come to a decision for the family, but understanding that people might want completely different things.
Yeah. Part of that is creating the space for individual time to exist. So let me give you an example, because I think it's easier to talk about in examples. We all have our one-on-one goals, our individual goals that we're interested in or our interests. And so we look at how are we going to foster this as an individual without sacrificing the family experience? So we kind of, I don't know, I guess I would say we're always checking the box like, okay, this is my son Micah loves dirt biking. We're going to do this today because this is Micah's goal. We're all going to participate. So there's a level of compromise. And to go back to that concept of alone versus family time, it's not binary. You don't have to choose one or the other. So when we're in the RV, 8 o'clock is like individual time for us, for the most part. I mean, that's obviously a general statement. But at 8 o'clock, generally my kids are winding down for the night and I either go for a walk or I go in the back bedroom. You know, I have enough space. One of our key criteria in designing the space for the RV was everybody had to have their own bed. So everyone had like a place to determine which space was theirs. So everyone has kind of their boundaries of what is theirs and what is ours as a collective. And I think that has also helped just in terms of time. So you also have together time and individual time. And that framework for us has been really helpful, but also knowing like we're never going to please everybody all the time. Like it's not going to be all or nothing either. There's options along the way. And much of that has to do with, you know, we've made the choice that our kids are not in travel sports for this exact reason. We didn't want to spend, at least not yet. We'll think about it maybe once they're in high school, but we made this intentional choice. I said to my son this year, you can either come to Hawaii with us or you can play travel baseball. And then they have the choice to decide, well, what are the options that I can make? If you want it all and that list is exhaustive, it's overwhelming. So I try to use like simple 3-5 options for my kids to decide what are the 3 things we're going to do or what are the 2 things we're going to do today, knowing that I'm trying to give them options that really align with family and personal goals.
I have a lot of questions. One is I'm genuinely curious. You're not in the RV at the moment, are you?
No, because it's not nearly this big in the RV.
Although that's a giant RV closet, if that's the case. But the follow-up to that was, you said you got a camper van in Hawaii. It was a 96 year camper van. How did you acquire that? Did you rent it? Did you buy it just to resell it? Like, I was genuinely curious. There's a car shortage, but suddenly you get this van. What a great solution. Like, what happened there?
Yeah. So I connected with some locals. So we had rented RVs before. In 2020, we rented RVs. When all of our travel plans got kiboshed, we were like, again, how can we look at this differently so that we're completely confined? We don't have to interact with everyone. We can have everything we need in one place. So that was kind of our first forte into RV life. So we knew there was this platform to rent RVs. And through one of them, we actually found a car on an RV rental site. And I was like, well, this is weird. So I inquired and they're like, well, we have this car because we know that it's a demand, but we have a lot of other options. If you'd rather have an RV, we have those too. And I was like, oh, so they had the camper van on there. And then, I mean, a little side hack, anytime you're working on any of those platforms, Airbnb, RV Share, Outdoorsy, any of those things to rent something from a person who's privately owned, ask them if they'll work outside the system. Because often they get, as long as you're trusting enough to know that this is actually going to happen, we took it offline outside one of those platforms and it was even cheaper yet. So they have this kind of side hustle, so to speak, where they're starting to acquire old RVs and fixing them up or camper vans and fixing them up. So it was kind of through a series of different ways to look for an option that we found this camper van that couldn't even be listed because it didn't meet the specs of Turo or Outdoorsy, but it was kind of a fun option for us. Like, yeah, we're willing to do that.
It's going to be a little bit embarrassing, a little confession here. And I admit that it's just the fact that I hadn't even thought to have the question, which is the entire point. I didn't realize that you could just rent RVs. Like if someone, cause you know how many of us, we were just making fun of this person that, you know, bought the sailboat and didn't even know if they would enjoy sailing. But how many of us, before we start something, buy the best, the brand new, we make this massive commitment, we show up and then, you know, we're spending the entire 3 or 4 hours that we're on the golf course just digging balls out of the weeds. And we say, we hate this, worst thing ever. How many of us have a version of that? What if you could just try it? What if you could just rent it? You want to try RV life? What if you could just, instead of investing whatever the dollar amount is for a 5 or 6 year old RV, just try it for a week. 2 weeks.
Yeah. And Jonathan, to go back to your point on testing it. So this has been a journey for us too. We started with a tent. And let me tell you, 3 kids and a dog in a tent was getting to be a little too adventurous for us. So then you start to learn your thresholds and you're like, okay, let's look at a pop-up. And we rented a pop-up camper. And then we realized like, we really need a bathroom. So it doesn't have to be all or nothing. And you don't have to go out of the gate and rent, you know, a huge brand new RV either. There are different options and steps you can take in that testing and iteration process.
Hey, this is Andrew from the Choose FI team. Hope you're enjoying the interview. We're going to get right back to it right after these quick messages.
You were talking about goals, and I'm really curious because it sounded like, you know, we have goals. And while, you know, I feel like probably at this point I have goals for myself, I don't necessarily know what my wife's goals are over a short or intermediate or maybe long-term time period. And I certainly don't know, and I give myself a little bit of get out of jail free card here with the clause here. I don't know what my kids' goals are at the ages of 4 and almost 2. But, you know, having said that, it said, when you said we have goals, it seemed like it was from a place of confidence, like conversations have been had. People have said out loud what it is that they want to focus on. I'd love to hear you explore that a little bit further if that's true.
Yeah, it's definitely true. With my husband and I, it's simple. Yeah, I guess there are certain times in the year, inflection points, beginning of the year, maybe midway through the year, when we're updating our net worth is usually when we have these conversations. So as a couple, as a partnership, we have conversations like, okay, it's not just about the money, but what is on our dream list and has that changed? So this is where we got to that point of simplicity too, that we realized all of the things we thought we were working towards aren't going to actually cost very much. So things like my husband wants to rebuild a car. Again, that's going to be hard to do in an RV, but could we test that on like fixing the RV up or doing something? You know, I think that has been one process, is just getting clear, maybe quarterly, having the conversation when you have your FI conversation of how does this fit our future lifestyle? And then with the kids, we do one-on-one time. We try to do one-on-one time every month. But when I was talking about that joy audit, let me back up for just a second. The whole thing that led me on this lifestyle design was a couple years ago, I was making way more money than I ever thought possible. Let's just put it that way. I was shocked. And I thought, oh, I can just buy everything, right? It was so easy to sign up for the Drift Life. And I quickly had that moment of like, but I don't want everything. But what do I want? Like, what do I want my life to look like? So that led me to the kind of the mantra of like, what if every day could be like vacation? And so we started to really peel back the onion on that too and say like, okay, what is it about vacation that you like? What is it about vacation that I like? And then it got into conversations of like, well, what are the things that actually bring you joy? And so for my, you know, my kids are just really curious. So my son loves art and he wants to go to an art museum and take a workshop. So it became these activity-based conversations and some intentionality around, I mean, is it a SMART goal? I don't know. Is it measurable? I don't know. I would say, because I can measure the joy, the amount of money and the amount of time, but is it scientific? No. I mean, I think some of it just has to do with some intentional conversations with every person in the family and just see like, what are they good at? What do they enjoy? When do I see the most authentic smiles on their faces? Because that for me is like, if it's forced and they're kind of just going along with it, you're like, you know, maybe this doesn't fit. If this feels like uncomfortable, that's one thing to grow through it, but it's another thing if this is painful.
Yeah. Heidi, are there ways, so for people who maybe haven't been in this mindset of adventure, like, are there sites that can kind of, I know this sounds silly, but like that help you brainstorm possible adventures? Just like, you know, here's a list of 1,000 possible adventures or something, just to like spark that creativity. Because I think, like I said, a lot of us who are just in that normal day to day, like, you know, when you joked about that, you know, we made a decision not to do travel sports. I'm like groaning inside of my head of like, our lives are basically swim taxis at this point. We just drive to and from swim practice. So, you know, you're stuck in that day to day, but you want to adventure, but sometimes it's hard to even be creative. Like, are there resources? I mean, obviously your podcast, but like, are there any resources or sites or groups or anything that just springs to mind?
It's interesting you asked that, Brad, because I didn't find many that really fit us, which is part of the reason I designed it, right? So part of the reason I designed Ordinary Sherpa was to really help families to connect for this exact purpose. So what I try to do though is in my, I guess social media is probably the best platform, I start to look for who's ahead of me. So some of the mentors I had along the way or people that I look up to or started to learn from were people like Vincent Puglisi, and I joined his mastermind, Julian Johnsrud, you know, people who have been in the FI space that you've had on your show. And I'm just kind of curious, Miss Adventure Rich, you know, she had the Adventure to Go bag. So things like that, I'll just look to them and go, okay, but how does that fit us? So I have, and I don't want to like promote myself.
No,
or anything,
promote, but, please. That's what okay. Brad's question was. Please. Yeah. If you tell us what you've done to solve this, because it is a need that all of us feel at some level.
Yeah. So one of the aspects, one of the key pillars of Ordinary Sherpa is really to build this adventure muscle. And so we have an everyday adventure subscription that you can engage in and a quarterly cohort challenge. So it's really challenging you to allow adventure to show up every day. And I know that's aspirational, but how can I get adventure in my life every day so that it becomes more comfortable and it doesn't feel like work? Because the more you practice it, you know, if you go back to James Clear, right, you don't start by running the marathon, you start by putting on your shoes. So it's helping people who want to adventure just put on their gym shoes.
That's really great.
I wanted to ask you about your year of yes and how that informs what we're talking about right now. So when you were 25, you said I had a year of yes, and people probably need to understand or appreciate like what that was. So maybe you could describe that. But then two, when you have a family, it's so logical and easy to say no, because you're in swim taxi season of life. I mean, there are so many conflicts that no is just by miles the easiest thing to do. So how can you create a system to allow even a month of yes, a week of yes, multiple weeks of yes to even be plausible in this phase of life?
Yeah, I'll start with the year of yes. That wasn't necessarily intentional. It was kind of based out of survival mode. I was in a really hard place and I didn't even know who my friends were anymore. Like it was just, I don't want to go down the rabbit hole of that whole story, but it just got to this point where I was like, what about my life do I actually like? I just didn't know anymore because I had done all the things that I thought everybody wanted me to do. And I just didn't, I felt stuck. I didn't know what to do. So then I was like, but what's the next step? Like, I don't even know what I like anymore. So that was the motivation. And it was everything from signing up for trapeze lessons, which this is just funny because it was in the park on a Sunday and I was free. And I was like, it's $27. Why wouldn't I sign up for trapeze lessons? It sounds like I could be five today. You know, like how fun is that?
I've actually done that. If I can interrupt, when we went to London in, I think it was Kensington Gardens, we saw, wow, there's this random trapeze thing set up. What on earth is that? So my daughter Anna and I spent a whole morning doing trapeze lessons there. That was one of the most fun adventures we've ever had in our lives.
It was awesome. And I'm actually pretty good at trapeze. Not that I wanted to sign up for that life, but it was fun. I had a lot of fun. So I was like, gosh, what else can I do that I can be like five again? You know, how awesome is it that I can be five and not have all the worries of the world? And so I just started doing stuff without caring what people thought about me or asking permission. And that, I think, that was really helpful because now it gave me the confidence to say, it doesn't matter if nobody's asking me permission, I can just do this because I want to do it. Now that's easy to do at 25. It's harder when you're a mom of three at 43 or however old I am. I'm actually only 41. I don't know why I just said that.
You're maturely aging yourself.
I don't know. I've always been very mature, I guess. So as a mom, you know, I think we had to get intentional because it's also really easy to surround yourself with busy work. And I decided I don't want to be the busy mom. I don't want to wear busy as a badge of honor. And I did that a lot in my 30s. So part of it too had to be with, why am I saying yes? What am I saying yes to? But then why am I saying yes? And I think that also helped me go, am I doing this because I feel like someone else wants me to do this? And is this really what I want to do? That, I think 2020 really helped me and my family get clear about our yes. Like, what are we actually signing up for? What do we actually believe in and want to do? As opposed to, I'm in my career, I have a lot of like networking events and fundraising events to attend. And I'm like, I'm going to start to choose which ones I actually want to go to, as opposed to feeling like I have to go to all of them. So I think it's a really powerful moment when you start to not only say yes, but then believe in your yes as something that you're actually, it's like a vote, right? It's a vote not only with my money, but it's a vote of my time. And is my time actually aligning with what I want to vote for?
Right. So when you're 25, you could just say yes. In this phase, say yes once you understand your motivations and how it fits into the life that you want to build. What systems allow you to actually say yes, though?
Well, in all honesty, it sounds really silly, but I took an email training in Outlook. But the reason I took that training was like, what do I do with everything that's coming at me? There are literally thousands of emails that come at me every day, and I didn't know what to do with it, right? So I was just feeling overwhelmed, and I felt like I had to save everything, every idea I needed to store in the right place so I could find it. And I'm not great at organization. So I just realized I need to do this with my life. Like, there are so many things that come at me, and I have to decide what to do with this information. So the system I've learned is either A, I do it, B, I delete it, and I just kind of ignore it. Three, I delegate it. Like, is this something my kids would want to do? Or four, I kind of defer it for a future date. So I have kind of the someday maybe list, and I don't have to think about those things all the time. That's allowed me to create a little bit more white space. Now we have intentional white space in our calendar and boundaries around our time so that we are able to say yes when an opportunity presents itself.
It's interesting that you mentioned just the white space. I'm curious, in your mind, at this stage in the game where you're not at FI, you have three kids, two full-time jobs, where are you at now with how much white space you can map out on a year? And like, is that one of the goals to stretch that, you know, as you get farther and farther down this path?
Well, it's definitely something I'm negotiating. We've been negotiating this with our employers so that we can have more space. And what are the expectations? We get intentional about what we sign up for. So it's easy. You know, I had to laugh going from May to June. especially in 2021, was fascinating. And I was just watching as parents around the world were like, oh, things are opening up and we haven't had anything for a year. And I was like, be careful, because what's going to happen is you've been craving this moment and now you're swamped with all these things, right? And it became true. You know, so many parents I talked to, I'm like, I'm not doing well with the transition. And I didn't, you know, create enough space in my calendar to have the freedom to really do the things I want to do. And I was like, I don't want to be like, I told you so. But when you have the lens of keeping some white space open in your life, you know, Monday nights for us is kind of white space. It's just the night that works for us. So we try to keep that open. Sundays are kind of white space days too, where if we wanted to do a family adventure, we just hold that space. It doesn't mean we say no to everything on a Sunday, but we just know now that it's kind of baked into our boundaries so that it's intentional, that we can say yes when we want to, but we try to protect that. And that's a known thing, right? And it works, you know, based on the trends we've had. Our kids don't typically get asked to do things on Sundays, and Monday nights are usually kind of like everybody's just going back to work or figuring out what life is, or they're going back to school. So it just works for our schedule. And we've just learned to build that in and predict what's coming.
Heidi, I have a question about that white space. Is there... And bear with me here. Is there a danger of having that white space in that you're almost looking for something to rise to the level of kind of like being worth it, right? Yeah. Like, is that worth filling our precious white space?
Yeah. Well, and there's also, Brad, if I'm being completely honest, there's so much FOMO in my life because I'm always like, oh, I could be doing this adventure and I could be doing this adventure. And so I have a really hard time. But to go back to your question, is there a danger in that white space? Like, what's worthy enough of filling the white space? And it's easy for me to go, oh, good. There's nothing scheduled. I'll go work on the podcast because I love doing that, right? That's what I really enjoy doing right now. But I have to be careful. I think you have to take indicators too from, am I saying no again because I'm trying to protect this white space? Well, then what are we doing with the white space? Are people miserable or are we thriving? I'll be honest, if I was to be really clear, I was a striver. I was an achiever. I was in all the things growing up. Being still and kind of enjoying the solitude and enjoying the quiet is really, really hard for me. So now that's my adventure, right? Because that's the uncomfortable thing. So it's almost like flipping the switch of what does adventure look like for you? It's personalized because for me, adventure means I have to slow down. I have to turn off the noise and I have to be intentionally still and have some quiet time in my life. And that's really uncomfortable. I'm not really great in that space.
Oh, I can definitely feel that, right? It's like you said before, a new or uncomfortable experience. Like that is the definition of adventure. So yeah, that's fantastic. And you know, I'm looking for these parallels to five, or I'm just not looking for them. I'm seeing them. I'm seeing them everywhere. Like that saying no is, I think, the third parallel to five that I've called out. It's right. It's like, you have to really find what lights you up. It's so easy to say yes to everything because there are so many things that are good enough, right?
Right.
But man, what rises to that hell yes level of like, we have to do this. So yeah, that's super cool.
A really good parallel, Brad, to that is, you know, you guys talk about building your budget based on value. The same can be true about your time. So if you build your experiences based around what you value, that's the same parallel to how, I mean, that's what I learned in financial independence is that I'm not saying no to everything. I'm choosing the things to say yes to. And that's the same with your time and with adventure.
I'm curious, what is on your current, is bucket list a term that's okay to use? Is that like something that you think about or something that's growing? You're putting things in there. Like what's on your like short-term bucket list? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't have a bucket list, but I have a someday maybe list. And I don't care. I don't get all caught up in the trends and all that kind of stuff. Someday, maybe. So I'm writing a book that is a completely different adventure for me. That's something I've aspired to do since forever. So I just decided I need to stop talking about it and start doing it. We are definitely exploring a gap year. That's probably 2 years off. Although my son said, you know, I think we could go next year. And I was like, I'm not ready. So the one more year syndrome is really hard right now because we do have enough saved that we could potentially take a year off. My kids all have kind of their own adventure lists. And so my daughter has this idea that she's going to hit all the national parks before she graduates high school. So my son, for the record, started playing baseball at age 2. Like he just loves baseball. And we started going to Major League Baseball stadiums. So it became his bucket list, so to speak, was hitting all the Major League Baseball stadiums before he graduated high school. Well, now my daughter, there's only 30 Major League Baseball stadiums. There's 63 national parks. So it's a pretty aspirational, like, I don't know that that's possible, but we'll see. And my other son, who's only 5, he hasn't set his goals yet, but he, I definitely try to see what's available to us. Again, my kids are way into outdoors things. My daughter loves horses. I don't know how to not sign up for horses yet. I've avoided it for 4 years. I got to figure out how I can keep avoiding that if possible. But we try to build that in then to our adventure experiences. We'll do horse camps. My son's into single track racing. And then my other son is big into fishing. So they're going to do a father-son trip to the Boundary Waters. And really, you know, they paddle everything out and they paddle everything back and they live off fish for almost a week. I don't know. Wow. That seems pretty crazy to me, but... And he's 5. Like, no, thank 5. You.
Okay.
That's
well,
amazing.
When you're having these types of conversations with your kids, it, I don't know, there's something very unique about it and special when you see it and you know it's, let's do more of this. But it kind of expands to other areas of their life. And, you know, knowing the types of people that are in your world, in your zone of awareness, like Vincent Puglisi, I know that he is a huge fan of homeschooling. And then I see you kind of also taking this, like, we have our most precious non-renewable resource, our time. How do we want to use it, you know, practicing untourism around the country and around the world? How does that affect or change what you want for your kids in terms of educational goals?
Yeah. My husband and I are both trained teachers. So it's hard for us to say no to just the things we had as kids. You know, I had sports active in my life. I had a peer group of people that I knew and trusted and liked. So we're thinking about how do we build that into the future of this? And we've asked the kids, you know, like, at what age would you want to be away from school for a year? Again, the beautiful thing of 2020 was that we were able to test some of these things. Some of my kids thrived and others struggled. And part of the struggle wasn't necessarily because they weren't learning. It was how the school was defining learning. And if they were checking the boxes, more often than not, it was like, you didn't turn in an assignment. And so they're not doing well. And I was like, well, that's, I'm not good with that. Like, what is actually learning and what are their educational goals? So I've studied a lot on self-directed learning and experiential learning. Going back, there is actually an entire science around adventure education. So there's opportunities for us to explore, but being comfortable in what fits us and what I want versus what my kids want, those are conversations that we continue to have. You know, there's a lot of educational research that you can do things differently than what we think is possible. And it just takes a matter of curiosity, but then also trying it and seeing, does it fit us?
Heidi, you confessed, I guess is the right word, that you are not an organized person. But it seems to me that what we're talking about requires a lot of planning, a lot of planning. Seems like those two don't go hand in hand, which, to be honest, I think is probably a point of encouragement. I think there's probably a lot of people that don't think of themselves as organized people and would tend to just write this off because they don't fall into maybe that type A category. We let life happen to us. We don't happen to life. And so, like, how do we merge these two? Like, is this something that people that don't think of themselves as organized could also realistically start to build as a framework for their adventure life?
Yeah. You don't run a marathon in a day, right? So this isn't something that you just automatically do. It's a practice. I'm not overly organized. My house is a mess, by the way. I mean, I'm not sure if you can see my closet. This is like a good day.
Go Cubs.
My life is not ideal and it doesn't always look pretty. And that's okay. Because I think the other thing too, is when you're living into your values and what's important to you, you heard in my values, their connection, creativity, and authenticity. Like it's not organization. It's not perfection. So I'm okay with not quite having it all figured out because this is who I really am. And we've tried to really embrace that as a family too, that yeah, I would love an organized house. I would love to walk in my house one day and have everything clean. But I don't know if it hits the priority list high enough for me to feel like, oh, well, that's worth investing in. So when you talk about adventure, though, that's a high priority for me. So I'm willing to put in a little bit more time. I'm willing to get a little bit better. And it frustrates me when I've already started this list and now I can't find it. So now I'm building a system so that I can access the things I want and need when I need them. So some of it does come with just building systems, but it also comes with building practice and playing into what you value in life and prioritize in life.
Yeah. And there's this, it seems to me there's this kind of tension, if you will, between like planning and spontaneity, right? And you actually referenced earlier, Mrs. Adventure Rich, who we had on way back in episode 76. And that episode was titled planned spontaneity, actually, right? So it was this interesting concept of they have like a to-go bag, they have a list of 10 or 15 things or whatever it is in their local area that they could do at a given moment, basically. And I thought this was really cool because to me, it's so easy to get stuck in that rut of every day, right? And then, okay, 3 or 4 hours opens up X. It wasn't planned white space, right? It wasn't whatever Sunday night. It was, hey, Saturday afternoon between 2 and 6, we've got nothing to do. What do? And we would invariably do nothing because we don't have anything planned, or we don't have a list, or we don't have, like, do you guys have a short-term list of, hey, if we've got 2 hours, we could do this? Or like, how do you conceptualize that?
Yeah. In our monthly adventure list, we have all of those kind of options in our back pocket. So a good example we have, similar to the planned spontaneity kind of episode, is when you practice this enough, you know what you need, right? So I know what snacks we need, and I just kind of have them stored in the house. I know that everybody needs a water bottle, so we have a canteen ready. So you start to build out, like, what do we actually need in order to say yes to things? I have a beach bag that's ready to go. I never can predict the weather. It's been raining here for 2 weeks, but if there was a nice day, trust me, after a week of rain, I'm going to say yes to an opportunity to get to a beach or a water park or something if the opportunity presents itself and the sun is out.
Where Brad and I would be looking at a sunny day, Googling cool things to do on a sunny day, right? Still in planning mode.
But the adventure list helps, right? So there's just places that we sometimes forget about. And I think this was also the motivation behind the list, is I would see things and be like, oh yeah, I got to do that. Well, you don't remember it when the opportunity is there. So now we just kind of throw it in this list. And my husband and I too also have a shared note on our phone, you know, a notes app on our iPhone, where we'll just kind of throw things on the list as we see them or think about them. There's this thing that we've wanted to go to. If I can allude just like one more suggestion, and I don't want to complicate things, but we also started to notice places when we're traveling or when we're driving that have these brown signs. And we just got curious, like, those are free places that we could go. So then I started to explore, Brad, to your point, there's a nice day. We get curious, like, what's a brown sign that's in our area? And that is like a local museum or park or attraction that generally is free or inexpensive. So we started to throw these on our list and get curious about what all these places were. And I think, again, 2020 just opened our eyes. Like, there's waterfalls within an hour of our house that we had no idea even existed. There were parks that we had never been to, these playgrounds, these epic playgrounds within an hour of our house that, again, that would have been a tourist attraction had we been traveling and not known, you know. So we started to go, gosh, we could be tourists in our own town, but we don't always know what the attractions or the options are. So that has really been a helpful motivator behind getting that list up and running when we think of it, as opposed to feeling like, oh, it's a nice day and now I got to do all this work in order to go adventure.
Yeah, that's really cool. I love the concept of just kind of like being on the lookout, right? And it's interesting because what actually just jumped to my mind was being on the lookout for, hey, even what type of place do I enjoy being in or living in? And when my family went to London, we stayed with my sister-in-law and her family, and they were in this suburb of London called Chiswick, and they were right off the high street, the high road, whatever it's called. It was like 100 yards to the high road, 100 yards to the tube station, you know, the underground. And we would never have realized how much that lit us up. Like, we loved being able to walk to places. We loved to have the market right there and just be able to go that morning and pick out food for dinner that night, or be able to, you know, take the subway to go wherever you wanted. Like, I know this is kind of a random digression, but like, it was one of those things that if we ever move in the future, we know we want that because it was fantastic. And never in a million years would I have thought that would have been my number one priority for a future home of Phi. And it was just like such a cool moment of, oh, wow, this is really important to us. And we had no idea.
I think you just like sealed the deal on why adventure is important. Because if you didn't do that trip, if you didn't do that experience, you wouldn't have known. You wouldn't have known that that was important to you because you didn't have that exposure. So as much as it's about new experiences and uncomfortable stuff, it's just, we don't even know what our options are sometimes. And we're making decisions based on what's conscious to us. And so I'd like to bring to light the unconscious, what's available, what are the options? And so that's how I've embraced adventure.
I mean, I think I've heard this on many of your episodes before, but thinking about adventure as a platform for connection, understanding that it teaches risk, resiliency, independence, and curiosity, that lifelong love of learning. Heidi, people are listening to this. Obviously, you're listening to a podcast now, so people know how to find podcasts. They should definitely go check out The Ordinary Sherpa, Ordinary Sherpa. Find it on your podcast player of choice. Heidi, I'll give this back to you. Is there maybe a particular episode that you would recommend they start with? And then outside of that, what is the best way to connect with you and your content?
Yeah, I'll start with, if they go to ordinarysherpa.com/subscribe, they'll get my email list, and it actually takes them through 10 episodes of like the essential. So if you're just getting started in Ordinary Sherpa, it'll walk you through kind of the pillars of adventure and how the show is laid out. So that might actually be the best place to enter into the Ordinary Sherpa space. But you can also find me on any handle, Ordinary Sherpa, any platform, I should say, Facebook, Instagram, at Ordinary Sherpa.
I think someone's going to ask us to close the loop. What is an ordinary Sherpa?
Yes, I love this question. When I was trying to figure out who I am and how I embrace adventure, I too went to Mount Everest, being like the icon of adventure. And I was reading a book actually about a climber on Mount Everest, and they talk so much about the Sherpa tribe. A Sherpa is essential for any mountain climber, any alpinist, to actually get to the summit. So I love that concept of Sherpa and the epic adventure, but I'm just an ordinary mom. Like, there's not a lot of things that I'm uniquely capable of. I'm just an ordinary person. So I wanted adventure to be accessible to working families. That's what an ordinary Sherpa is. And there's an entire community to help these families reach a summit that you choose.
All right. Well, if that describes you in any way, go check out the podcast, Ordinary Sherpa. You will not regret it. It might change your life. Heidi, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Yeah, thank you. This is great.
All right, everyone. I hope you got value from today's episode. Like, comment, subscribe, depending on your platform of choice, and share this episode with someone that would benefit. Maybe that kind of reluctant partner that, you know, would like to say they've done adventure, but, you know, they're not living that out. So maybe this is an easy way to on-ramp it and get closer to being able to say yes together. All right, my friends, the fire is spreading. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.